You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
In Play Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the National Football League podcast here with William Hill. Dave Kellner in the studio with Gil Alexander, the host of the Beating the Book podcast, on the line stateside to look ahead to week number 14 in the National Football League. First of all, a warm welcome, a good morning stateside to Gil Alexander. Good morning, Gil.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, sir. How are you?
I am good. Early here in lovely California. Actually, very rainy California this morning.
What time is it right now, Gil?
Just past 7 a.m., but for you, Dave Kellner, anything.
It's always it always feels like an absolute privilege to have you on the podcast, Gil. Start, as we always do, with a reflection on last night's match, and the Arizona Cardinals just edging the Minnesota Vikings by the 3 points in the end, Gil.
Yeah, I got that game wrong. I had Arizona, and I was way ahead of the line. I had Arizona minus 8.5 early in the week. By game time, you know, at one point it got all the way to 10.5 before settling in at 10. And the reason for that is that Minnesota had a flurry of injuries on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, it made sense why both the public and sharp bettors were all over the Cardinals. Both, I mean, that was a big win for Vegas books yesterday, because the Cardinals only won it by 3. And really, Teddy Bridgewater deserves all the credit. You know, rookie quarterback who got blitzed incessantly yesterday, and maybe the Cardinals should have ratcheted that back a bit, because Bridgewater handled it beautifully, and the Cardinals only able to muster a 3-point win when Dwight Freeney was able to knock the ball out of Bridgewater's hand on what would have been the play before a potential game-tying field goal. So they actually just really won it in dramatic fashion, did the Cardinals yesterday.
He's playing with a lot of poise, isn't he, Teddy Bridgewater? Looks to be the future of the franchise, Gil.
Yeah, you know, his stats aren't very spectacular. You know, he's really what you would call a game manager. As long as he has Adrian Peterson back there, he's not asked to do too much, and he does what he needs to do very well. Now, he was somewhat exposed. The Vikings were exposed as a team against the Seahawks last week, and we were on the Seahawks, and we won that easily. But last night, I have to say, that might have been his most poised effort of the season. He really handled the relentless pressure well. And I'll tell you, his face is one of those faces where it does not belie any nerves whatsoever. He looks like he just handles, at least outwardly, he looks like he just handles everything very level-headed, and good performance by him, even in defeat. I mean, you know, those of us who bet forget sometimes that the Vikings actually lost that game, even though they covered the spread. But, yeah, Vikings, they look like they'll still be a playoff team, though Green Bay has a chance to eclipse them in the North this weekend.
Let's get stuck into this weekend's matches that are televised here in the UK, Gil. And we start with the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Cincinnati Bengals. This is 6 p.m. UK time. The Steelers are 5-4, the Bengals 20-29. And on the spread, the Steelers plus 2.5 is even money. The Bengals minus 2.5 with extra juice here at 5-6, Gil. And this is one of those lines this weekend that has moved.
It has moved, and right now, as we're doing this Friday morning, about 48 hours before game time, it's settling in right now as the Bengals as 2.5-point favorites. I see sort of consensus across the board. But this, 2.5 with extra juice, so it's teetering on 3. And it opened at 3, so it has moved, which means there's been some Pittsburgh money predominantly through the week. And that makes sense. You know, I could very well see it settling right back in at 3 by game time. I think that's probably where it sticks. And that makes sense to me. This is where that line ought to be. You have a 10-2 Bengals team against really the proverbial, I don't know if you guys say this in the Premier League or in any other sports there in the UK, but we always have the teamer teams that, quote-unquote, no one wants to face in the playoffs, and Pittsburgh would really qualify as that sort of team. That's the team that's, you know, they're right now, if the playoffs were to start tomorrow, they wouldn't technically be in, but you get the sense that all the other teams would prefer not to have to play this kind of offense in the playoffs. This should be a real good football game.
It should. I'm surprised this one's at 6 p.m. UK time, which is around about 10 a.m. In the States, Gil. I'm surprised this isn't one of the primetime matches this week, because it's the game of the week as far as I'm concerned, Gil, this NFC North battle. I suppose there might be a little bit of revenge in the offing as well, with Cincinnati having beaten Pittsburgh at Heinz Field in the first matchup in the series this season. They won that game 16-10, and that was the game Le'Veon Bell got injured in, Gil, and it was a contentious moment there, and I think Pittsburgh will remember that going into this match.
They sure will. We tend to sometimes exaggerate with pro athletes, think about these kind of things, but in this case, they admit outward, both of these teams, we don't like each other. And the incident you refer to, Le'Veon Bell's game and season-ending injury, which was a really ugly injury, and just as a football fan, you know, just awful for everybody. But it did seem, perhaps, that Bengals linebacker Vontaze Burfict, you know, the Steelers thought he looked like he was celebrating it a little, which, you know, depends on which side of the ball you're on. You might have conviction on one way or the other. Either way, not thrilled with each other, and that was Big Ben's worst performance of the season against the Bengals beyond that incident. He set season lows in yards per attempt at 5.8. His total QBR was at its worst this year, 23.3. That scored out of 100 in their Week 8 loss, as you mentioned, 16-10. Three picks for Big Ben that day. That's his season high in picks. He was sacked three times. That matches a season high in terms of the number of times he was sacked this year. So it was just a terrible performance for the Steelers all around. But boy, has this been a different Steelers team in the last month. For sure. And those numbers are completely, diametrically opposed. The Steelers have averaged 35.8 points a game over the last four games, 529 yards of offense. Big Ben himself just putting up video game numbers, Dave. 383.3 yards passing per game, 10 touchdowns over those last four games. I mean, this is a really, and here's the biggest thing. I mean, as long as we're throwing out numbers, and this is from the Elias Sports Bureau, the Steelers 2,116 yards of offense, which you just mentioned, at 529 yards per game. That's the second most yards in any four-game span within a season in NFL history by any team, period. The 1982 Chargers were the only team to beat that. And I actually, as a kid, is how old I am, actually as a kid, vaguely remember that team. You know, Dan Fouts, Joe Gibbs, offensive coordinator, ended up being a legendary team. So these Steelers are formidable, and the Bengals are kind of banged up in the secondary. Adam Jones won't play due to a foot injury, among others. So could be very interesting at Cincinnati this Sunday.
That was something to watch last week. You've been through all the numbers, but they routed the Indianapolis Colts, and Antonio Brown returning that that was just ridiculous, Gil. That was the worst celebration I've ever seen, and I couldn't stop watching it either, because it was obviously everyone was tweeting it as a vine, and it just played over and over and over again. It became like a sick addiction watching that touchdown and his celebration afterwards.
I laughed out loud. I rarely do that during a football game, but I thought it was so funny. First of all, why was he back there? The Steelers were up 35-10, and you have, unless you prefer to vote for Big Ben, you have your best player. The best player on your team is back in punt return formation. I don't know why he's there in the fourth quarter up 25 points. Nonetheless, he was back there risking injury, but he sprinted through the coverage. I mean, it was just absolutely awesome. And yes, once he crossed the goal line, for those who don't know what we're talking about, he decided to make a beeline for the goalpost and essentially straddled it, jumped and straddled it, and then fell to the ground. But really could have hurt himself that way too. You know,
I've got it in my mind's eye now, just talking about it, Gil. I'm remembering it again. So what do you make to this spread then, Gil? The Steelers plus 2.5. Is the number right where you think it should be?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think it is where it should be. I mean, this is one of those games where you could absolutely see this ending in a field goal. You know, it's exactly where it should be. Will the Steelers, who are just on all cylinders on offense, will they be able to essentially outscore the Bengals? Because the Bengals are going to get things done on offense, despite the fact that the Steelers lead the league in yards per play at 6.5 and yards per rush attempt. Now the Steelers also on the ground. I mean, that's the amazing thing. Even with Le'Veon Bell out, behind, you know, with D'Angelo Williams, they lead the league in yards per rush attempt. So they're doing this every which way on offense. This is a epic offense. But they're going into Cincinnati, and yes, it is revenge, and boy, do the Steelers need this game, and I'll tell you why. I mean, the Bengals right now, tied with the Broncos and the Patriots, all 10-2 in the AFC. Technically, the Bengals are the number one seed right now. So obviously, they have a lot to play for. But the Steelers, despite everything we've said at 7-5, they're on the outside looking in. They almost have to win out. A loss here would place their playoff chances at 33%, whereas if they win, their playoff chances soar to 77%. So this is a huge swing game for the Steelers. But in terms of handicapping it, my numbers fall right at 3. I mean, this is what the spread ought to be. If you put a gun to my head, which I know you do quite often, Dave, I wish you would stop that.
A metaphorical one, Gil.
Yes. We have a gun problem in the United States. I don't need another. I would probably just, for some reason, I see Cincinnati pulling it out. But this is not a game that I would leap to play on the side.
Okay, Gil, that's the 6 p.m. start time, the televised game between the Steelers and the Bengals. Let's move on to the 9:25 p.m. game, which is the Dallas Cowboys at the Green Bay Packers. The Cowboys are 5-2. The Packers 1-3 on the money line. The spread is set at 7 here, Gil. The Cowboys plus 7 at 5-6, and the Packers minus 7 at even money. And the Cowboys still have a shot, Gil, at the division, despite sitting at 4-8 in the NFC East. And they finally, Gil, managed to win a game without the assistance of Tony Romo at quarterback last weekend.
Yeah, at the expense of my boyhood love, the Washington Redskins. Yeah, the Cowboys are fascinating. Yeah, the NFC East, 5-7 for the Redskins, Giants, and Eagles, and then the Cowboys at 4-8, as you mentioned. So, yeah, they're still playing for it. And, you know, they didn't put Tony Romo on injured reserve. When he re-injured his collarbone, typically a team that was that with that poor of a record would put Tony Romo on season-ending injured reserve. But the Cowboys, knowing that they're in this very poor division and playing just for this circumstance, didn't put him on IR. So if the Cowboys somehow, and it's still a possibility, get to the playoffs, Romo would actually be able to, you know, play football again. So they still have him eligible, even though he is obviously not able to play here during the regular season. But this, you know, when last we saw the Cowboys in Lambeau, Dave, as you and your listeners will recall, it was when referees were overruling that Dez Bryant catch in the playoffs at Lambeau Field. And, you know, the never-ending American football struggle of what is and what is not a catch that we seem to have trouble with here in most recent years. But a lot of money, you know, some money starting to trickle in on the Cowboys. This was 7 all week long, the spread. You're seeing some 6.5s pop up now, and getting it off that key number of 7, that requires a lot of money. And I would lean Cowboys here as well. I am absolutely a Cowboys better in this case. Cowboys are nothing. I think that's a lot of points despite the very suspect play of Matt Cassel.
Yeah, they don't want to put too much pressure on Matt Cassel, do they, really here, Gil? But they haven't been able to get Darren McFadden going on the ground in the last couple of games, which is, I suppose, the primary concern for Dallas in this matchup. They need to get McFadden running the ball with the same sort of fluency he did earlier in the season.
Yeah, not having DeMarco Murray and him ending up on the Eagles has been the proverbial lose-lose situation for those two teams. It really hasn't helped the Eagles that much, and the Cowboys have suffered since. McFadden hasn't gotten it going. But I will say this about the Cowboys, and this has been the tough part about handicapping Cowboys games all season long. When you assess the defensive line and the offensive line, which is a really good way to start and when you handicap any NFL game, the Cowboys just are really solid up on the front. You would think, one would think, that with that offensive line, they'd be able to just knock people over and McFadden would have this great season. It just hasn't happened. Mm. But as you go from game to game, that's sort of the, you know, the thing you have to think about with the Cowboys. That's why you have to give them respect. And in the case of that defensive line, listen, Aaron Rodgers, despite that dramatic Hail Mary, and boy, was that amazing last Thursday night. So the Packers will be on extra rest here. Aaron Rodgers has not been Aaron Rodgers. Through week 7, he had an 80.8 total QBR that scored out of 100. Since then, 57.5, very pedestrian, 23rd in the league. And to give you some idea, Dave, as to how that stacks up, Blaine Gabbert, Sam Bradford, and Brock Osweiler have been better in their respective times behind center in varying degrees here in the past few weeks. And over the last 6 games, you know, the Packers were 6-0. They're 2-4 over the last 6 games. That's the exact same record as the Cowboys have had over the last 6 games. So this is we have to kind of think of the Packers in a different way. And Rodgers has been picked off in consecutive games for the first time in 3 years. He's failed to produce a passer rating of at least 106 straight games. That's out of 158. Passer rating is a quirky little stat. And that was after reaching that figure 11 times last year to earn league MVP honors. Mm-hmm. And then there's Eddie Lacy. You know, you talk about Darren McFadden. Eddie Lacy apparently... there was some sort of disciplinary issue. It was reported that he missed curfew the night before, but they haven't confirmed that. They confirmed there was some sort of disciplinary issue, so who knows? Maybe the disciplinary issue is that he's just fat. That could very well be. Either way, they're doing this platoon between Lacy and James Starks. It's just not working out. And again, we've said this before, those receivers are just not getting any separation. Without Jordy Nelson, it is tough out there for Aaron Rodgers. So I think the Cowboys will keep this close.
Yeah, and they needed that 61-yard Hail Mary pass to stop them. If they'd have lost that game, Gil, that was 5 of 6. The last 6 dropped. So you won miracle pass away from them having lost 5 of the last 6, which it's not the Packers that we are used to, really, Gil.
Not at all. And the big stat that everyone's throwing around here is that the Packers... You know, this is Lambeau Field. They're not supposed to lose there. And the Packers have not lost 3 in a row at Lambeau since 2006. Now, if they were to lose this one, that would be it. They'd lose 3 in a row here. But that hasn't happened in 9 seasons, and that was Mike McCarthy's first season when that last happened. So Cowboys chasing a bit of history at Lambeau here at the Packers' expense. But it's 7 points, couple 6.5s creeping up, and I do like the Cowboys getting all those points. If they can just get something from that backfield, from McFadden behind that offensive line, because you're right, they do have to take pressure off Matt Cassel. Against the Redskins, even in victory on Monday night, Cassel, horribly inaccurate, and it's just a matter of forcing a couple turnovers for the Cowboys, getting a little thing going on the run game. That's obviously going to be the key for them to keep it close. But I think that'll happen.
Cowboys plus 7, the pick, with extra juice currently at 5-6. Do grab the 7, though, because that's going towards 6.5. And we'll move on to primetime now, Gil. We've got the New England Patriots at the Houston Texans, which is the 1:30 a.m. game, early hours of Monday morning here in the UK. The Patriots are 5-9 on the money line, the Texans 8-5. And the spread here, 3.5 currently. The Patriots minus 3.5 at even money. The Texans plus 3.5 in the betting at 5-6. Line movement here, Gil, first of all?
Let's check that, actually. It's a very good question. I mean, it's a good question because something happened in practice yesterday that's of note. And... yeah, a little line movement. I mean, it did open at 3 with extra juice and quickly went to 3.5, but it's been at 3.5 kind of all week long, really. You might see some 3.5s with reduced juice, but it's gone from 3, 3.5, 3, 3.5. It's at 3.5 right now. Mm. J.J. Watt broke his hand in practice on Wednesday,
yeah.
And he confirms that. And, you know, for those of us who have already bet the Houston Texans, that's not a pleasant bit of news. But Watt insists, you know, hey, you think it's a detriment? Why don't you come at me? He's not stepping off the field. He's still playing, so I like to hear that anyway. He is, without question, the best defensive player and the most impactful defensive player in the league. Listen, we talked about how the Packers haven't lost at Lambeau 3 times in a row since 2006. The Patriots have played 212 consecutive games without suffering a three-game losing streak. That dates all the way back to 2002 in Tom Brady's first full season as a starter. That's the second longest streak in NFL history, according to the Elias Sports Bureau, and this would be if the Patriots lose their third straight loss. And, you know, I had a couple guys on my show, Marco D'Angelo, who's been a handicapper for about 100 years. He'll kill me for saying that. But he's been a handicapper for 35 years, and his whole take on this is, watch what happens. This is a late game. This is a Sunday night game. And all these bettors who are going to lose money on Sunday morning, they're going to wait to bet this New England-Houston game right before game time, and they're going to know that stat. The Patriots never lose three in a row, and they're going to pour money in on the Patriots close to game time. That's his theory, which, you know, if you're leaning Houston, maybe your play is to wait as long as you can before betting them, because nothing but Patriots money, he speculates, will come in at the end of this game. But I really like Houston. I think that the Patriots have finally reached the point where, you know, Brady and Belichick have been able to do this with smoke and mirrors through all their injuries, through the Edelman injury, through the Amendola injury. Amendola is actually back now. But when Gronk, I mean, through the Deion Lewis, through the Aaron Dobson injuries, but with Gronkowski out, we've talked about this on this show before, Dave. He is the tipping point, and we saw against the Eagles. Now, I know the Eagles had three return touchdowns last week, so it's not exactly a fair barometer of that final score where the Eagles beat the Patriots last week 35-28. But we did see, despite that, a bit of discombobulation from Brady that we're not used to seeing. Two really kind of shocking picks, one that was deep in the Eagles territory that was returned for a touchdown, a pick six by Malcolm Jenkins. But the one that I think was more telling was the ball he threw up in the air deep into the end zone, which the Eagles easily picked off, that Brandon LaFell and Brady had a miscommunication on. I just think when Gronkowski is not in there, that's a safety blanket that goes away from Tom Brady, and he becomes, you know, look, he's never going to be a poor quarterback, but let's just say he becomes a lot more human. And the numbers to back that up, updated real quick, is that since 2010, Brady, with Gronk in the game, has a 6.7 touchdown percentage and a 3.5 touchdown percentage when he's not. I get these from Mike Sando at ESPN. These are great stats. In other words, 6.7% of the time that he throws passes, it's a touchdown. With Gronk on the field, it reduces to 3.5 without him. With Gronk on the field, 181 touchdown passes to just 42 picks. Without Gronk, 42 touchdowns to 19 picks. Again, not bad, but a lot more human. And we can talk about it in passer rating and QBR as well. 104.9 to 86.8. QBR, 72.3 all the way down to 59.5 without Gronk. So, listen, it's not just our eyes. It's backed up in the numbers.
Yeah, and I suppose this line will move considerably if Rob Gronkowski is deemed fit, because his status is still uncertain, Gil. From what I've read anyway, he has returned to practice, but it's apparently a game-time decision, but the likelihood is he won't be featuring in this matchup.
I think that's an accurate assessment of it. You know, on my show yesterday, we spoke of it as if it was fait accompli. That's French, by the way, Dave. I'm not sure if you're aware. That he would not play. And you're right, they're leaving the door just slightly ajar. Just slightly ajar for Gronk to play. My hunch is that he won't, but who knows? Who knows? Bill Belichick's not going to let us know, that's for sure. But this is an interesting game where the Texans ought to be somewhat familiar, you would think, with the Patriots. Bill O'Brien, the head coach of the Texans, got his first NFL gig from Belichick. He was a quality control assistant back in the glorious Patriots season of 2007, but defensive coordinator Romeo Crennel was with Belichick. Linebacker coach Mike Vrabel was a great Patriots linebacker. Nose tackle Vince Wilfork won a Super Bowl with the Pats. Brian Hoyer, the Texans starting quarterback, was Brady's backup from 2009 to 2011. It's a long time ago. You'd think they'd have some insight to Belichick. Probably not, because they haven't been there in a while, but you know, that's an angle to like the Texans. They certainly will not have any trouble getting up for this game. You know, these are guys they want to beat. And then there's Watt and Hopkins, who who, besides Brady, are the best two players on the field in this game on either side of the ball. J.J. Watt, 13.5 sacks, a team-high 24 tackles for a loss. And then DeAndre Hopkins, 69 first-down receptions. I don't think the Patriots are going to be able to hold him in check. I love, you're giving me the 3.5 points here, 3 in the hook being the key. I like the Texans here, man. I think the Patriots may actually lose a third straight.
Wow, good stuff. Thank you, Gil. That's the New England Patriots at the Houston Texans. And at Monday Night Football is the New York Giants at the Miami Dolphins. The money line, the Giants 4-5, the Dolphins 21-20. And the spread, just a point here, the Giants -1 at 10-11, the Dolphins +1 at 10-11. Gil, the New York Giants make snatching defeat from the jaws of victory a regular occurrence. They provided us with their latest masterpiece last week against the New York Jets. They're unbelievable. I was on the Giants last week and leading by 10 points in the fourth quarter. Tom Coughlin makes the decision to go for it on fourth down. And then suddenly it's a tied ball game and Josh Brown misses the field goal in overtime. And the Giants, they just find a way to lose football matches.
They really do. They really do. It's an epidemic. By the way, were you watching that game live, Dave? The Giants game?
I didn't watch the game live. I was just tracking it and thinking there was almost that feeling of inevitability about it as well, Gil. That's the distressing thing.
Yeah, we had a debate. We had a not a spirited debate, but we had a bit of a debate about that call by Coughlin last week, the one that you mentioned going for it on 4th-and-2 at the Jets 4 with 8:50 left, up 10. And, you know, we had a debate. One gentleman thought that it was terrible that he did that. I'm in the camp that, you know, I think it was a smart move. Now, Eli threw an interception. They didn't convert it. And the Jets come back and eventually win the game in overtime. It also involved, as you said, a missed field goal. So I think it's a bit of armchair quarterbacking to kill Tom Coughlin about that decision. On the other hand, you're right. I mean, this has just been the Giants' thing this year. They've lost 4 games in the last minute and a 5th game when they were up with 1:14 left. So if you had shaved 75 seconds off those 5 games, now, in fairness, there's one game against the Niners that they actually won in the last 1:15 also. So if you shave 75 seconds off all the Giants games, instead of being 5-7, they'd actually be 9-3. But 5 games they've lost in the last 1:15. So, you know, that Niners game aside, that's amazing. That's just, you can't even possibly imagine what that must do to a team. Yet, here they are tied atop the NFC East, the worst division in football. So they have a lot to play for. You know, they've lost 3 in a row, but how much have they been outscored by in those 3 games? A grand total of 10 points.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you look at it through that prism, you say to yourself, well, then this team must not be that bad. This team must be very good, actually, that just has a lot of bad luck. Maybe, I don't know, because the very first thing when I do my guessing line show on Monday, when the lines are first thrown out to me, my immediate reaction to this game was, oh, good Lord, how can you predict this game? Because these are two teams, the Giants, for all the reasons we just stated, you don't know what you're getting, not only from week to week, but from first, you know, 58 minutes and 45 seconds to the last minute and 15 seconds. And then there's the Dolphins, the symbol of mediocrity in the NFL this year, Dave.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, I don't even know, what's their identity? I can't even tell you.
I've got that written down right here. They don't appear to have any identity at all, the Miami Dolphins. I mean, they threw it with abandon in the loss to the Jets and then kept it on the ground when edging the Ravens last week. You'd expect that they'll let Ryan Tannehill air it out against this Giants secondary, but it's just impossible to predict how they're going to approach this matchup.
And the thing with the Dolphins is they fire coaches and then they bounce. You know, that's sort of been their thing. They fired their head coach earlier in the season. And this past week they replaced offensive coordinator Bill Lazor with their quarterback's coach calling plays, Zach Taylor. And Lazor was fired. Taylor called plays last week against the Ravens. And Tannehill threw a grand total of 19 passes for 86 yards. And they only mustered 8 first downs against the Ravens in victory. The week before that, when Lazor was calling the plays, Tannehill threw a career-high 58 times in a loss to the Jets. So with the Giants' pass defense, as you mentioned, and the Giants' pass defense is giving up 7.7 yards per pass attempt, which is a lot, near the bottom of the league, you would think that the Dolphins would revert back to passing the ball a lot. But,
yeah,
you know, who knows? My take on this game is that you have absolutely, you know, if you're going to try to decide a winner here, and by the way, the Giants are slight favorites in this game on the road. They were at 1.5 points. This game opened as a pick'em, but the Giants are a bit of a favorite now. 1.5 points, depending on where you're betting right now. I'm not so sure this game shouldn't be a coin flip in that regard. I you know, it's a Monday night game. To give you an idea, some sense of United States demographics, the Dolphins have not had a sellout in forever, but they actually have a sellout for this Monday night game.
Yeah.
The reason, because there's so many transplanted New Yorkers in Miami. So this place is going to be flooded with Giants fans, and it's going to be sold out on Monday. But it is a primetime game. The Dolphins don't get many shots at this, and I think their defense will recognize the stage. This was a defense that was supposed to be really good at the beginning of the season. There was no reason to think that this Dolphins defense would not be one of the NFL's elite, with Ndamukong Suh added to an already stout defense. And yet it hasn't been that way. They've just been so mediocre. But I think this is the night where they show up. And this game's a field goal either way. This is going to be a tight game. I can't see it going any other way but that way. So as far as betting on the side, I don't recommend that. But I do see an under here. 46.5 is the total. If I were to bet this game, I'd go under, because I do think that that's a lot of points in a game where I think the Dolphins defense shows up, and then I wouldn't rely on the Dolphins offense to do a whole bunch, even with a sieve-like Giants pass defense.
Under 46.5 points, 10-11. Just to go back to the Tom Coughlin decision just one more time, Gil, and then I will let this lie forever.
Bitter, are you?
Just a little bit. Does it show a lack of trust in the defense going for it in that situation?
I don't think so.
No.
I think what you're thinking is this. Look, I'm up 10. There's 8:50 left. I need 2 yards. If I kick a field goal here, it's 13. Yeah, they'll need 2 touchdowns. But you know what? If I punch this in, it's 17. They're not going to get. And by the way, if I don't punch this in, they're pinned back all the way on their side of the field, down 10. If anything, it's sort of a nod to my defense will shut them down and will not let them, you know, matriculate the ball all the way downfield from their own 2-yard line. Of course, that didn't happen. So, you know, we tend to judge with our human brains on result instead of process, which is never a good thing. But I think the process is right. I mean, look, there's been many of these types of decisions throughout the league this year. Atlanta against San Francisco, some people will recall, Atlanta opted to kick a field goal down. They were down in that game. They were down, I think, 5 or 4 points. Late in the game, they decided to kick a field goal instead of trying to punch it in, and they thought their defense could stop the Giants. Well, their defense wasn't good enough, so the field goal, instead of going for it, was a very suspect call. But then, you know, the Steelers were at the 4-yard line of the Seahawks, and they opted to kick a field goal when they were trailing instead of trying to punch it in, and that didn't work out. You know, there's been a number of these types of decisions, and I think the key is to remain consistent as viewers. The one thing that I can't stand is when folks flip-flop, and they're like, oh, well, it didn't help. You know, they tend to rate the decision based on how it affects them as bettors rather than being consistent with it. So for me, to have been consistent, I didn't see any problem with Coughlin doing this, though it did not work out.
The under the play then in the Giants at the Dolphins, 46.5, the number there. Under on the points is 10-11. Gil, as always, we'll finish with your 5 best bets for the weekend's action in the National Football League. Gil?
Well, we're already 0-1, Dave. I had the Cardinals yesterday, so your listeners are spared that call. I had the Cardinals, again, way ahead of the closing line. Didn't matter. Cardinals only won by 3. The other 4 picks are, well, we've mentioned a couple of them. 1, I like the Houston Texans getting 3.5 at home against the Patriots for all the reasons stated. I just think that that is going to be a bit of a Waterloo for Tom Brady. He just doesn't have the weapons, and I'm assuming, you know what they say about assuming, but I'm going to assume Gronkowski does not play in this football game. So Houston is one of those picks. I like the San Francisco 49ers. Yes, great football. San Francisco at Cleveland. San Francisco's the dog in this game. I think they win this outright. They're a 1.5-point underdog. I think they win it outright. Cleveland's bad. They've got Johnny Manziel in there, and they ought to have Johnny Manziel in there just to find out what they have in him as a player for the last 4 weeks of the season. But I think the Browns are worse with him in the lineup than they are with McCown. And I think Blaine Gabbert, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Blaine Gabbert's playing really well for the Niners, and I think that win over the Bears last week energized them. I like the Niners going into Cleveland and beating the Browns outright. So the Niners are the third pick. Fourth pick, the Oakland Raiders getting 7 on the road against the Broncos. This is a must-win, the proverbial must-win for the Raiders if they want to have any chance of making the playoffs in the AFC. And I think as good as Denver is, you know, Brock Osweiler's not exactly getting the ball downfield. He's not spreading out that offense. And I think as great as the Denver defense is, Derek Carr is going to bounce back from what was, without question, his most poor performance of the season last week, just missing receivers. But those receivers are open, and I think they're going to still be open. And I think the Raiders are going to cover this game in a track meet with Denver. They'll cover the 7 points. I like Oakland at Denver. And the final pick, the Seattle Seahawks. Seahawks on the road at Baltimore. They're giving up 10 points. Let me update that. It's 10 or 10 and a half now.
Yeah, it's just gone from 10 to 10 and a half, I think. Well, it has with William Hill anyway, Gil, and it's definitely edging that way.
Yeah, I love Seattle here. Though, admittedly, I did get them at 10. But yeah, 10 and a half, I like them too. Listen, Baltimore doesn't have Flacco. They don't have Forsett. They don't have Steve Smith Sr. And I think Seattle is simply showing themselves to be every bit the formidable team. Again, we talk about Pittsburgh being the team you don't want to play in the AFC. Seattle's the team you don't want to play in the NFC playoffs. 7-5 on their record, but in all five of those losses, they've been ahead in the fourth quarter. And I think they win this going away at Baltimore. Russell Wilson has been spectacular. So I like the Seahawks as the fifth pick. So Arizona was the first, but the remaining four, Houston, San Francisco, the Raiders, and the Seahawks.
Are you liking the look of the Seahawks for the Super Bowl, Gil?
Well, it's going to be tough because they're going to have to go on the road against the Panthers or the Cardinals to do so. And that's always a tough proposition. But, you know, if you can get some favorable odds on them, then it's still a pretty solid bet. But that is the roadblock. That'll be the difference this year between this year and the previous 2 years for the Seahawks is the road will not go through Seattle. I think we're late enough in the season where we can say that confidently. Well, there's no way mathematically they can catch the Panthers for one if the Panthers were to get to the NFC Championship. But even the Cardinals, record-wise, the Seahawks probably won't catch them now either. So they'll have to do it as a wild card. But yes, might they be just as good a football team as those in the NFC? I think they might very well be at this point.
9-1 they are to win Super Bowl 50. The Carolina Panthers are at the head of the betting, currently at 7-2. Gil, thank you for your company. Always superb. Make sure you check out Gil's podcast as well, at Beating the Book. Follow Gil on Twitter. You can follow myself, at D. Kellner. And good luck for your bets in week number 14. Thank you, Gil.
Thank you, Dave. Good luck to you as well, sir.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.